Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting Cirque May, Wednesday, October 2nd at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. I've been traveling over the summer, so I haven't hosted Local Talk in several months, so it's nice to be back on the air. We had another rainy weekend, although not quite as stormy as the previous weekend, and it looks like things will be drying out a bit during the coming week. Today, it will be mostly sunny with a high of 75. Tuesday will be warmer, going up to 80 degrees. By Wednesday and Thursday, the humidity will finally drop and temperatures will be around 70, with only a slight chance of rain. But once Friday rolls around, we may be in for more rain and thunderstorms. Yesterday was the Octagon Arts Festival in downtown Ames. It was a wonderful event, despite the rain in the morning, with lots of vendors selling their artistic creations and many people stopping by KHOI's table out in front of the station. And we hope that you did, too. We have a great show for you today. We're going to be talking with Lucia Suarez about the Latino-Latina Studies Anniversary Symposium that will be taking place at ISU on Saturday. We will also hear from Tammy Kuhlbeck of the Iowa State Center about the new plans to develop the area around the stadium and Hilton Coliseum and how they might impact the Iowa State Center. And we will talk with Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau for her monthly visit. But first, we have Dennis Hart with news from across the state.
Hello, Gail. It's great to have you back here on Local Talk. And hello, everyone else. There was plenty of news last week, much of it revolving around politics and the weather. First, politics. The latest Des Moines Register CNN MediaCom Iowa poll came out yesterday, and it showed that Democratic presidential hopeful Elizabeth Warren had overtaken Joe Biden among likely Democratic caucus-goers. Warren is the choice of 22%. Biden has 20%. Bernie Sanders trails with 11%, while Pete Buttigieg has 9% and Kamala Harris has 6%. Meanwhile, lots of Democratic presidential hopefuls came back to Iowa last week, taking part in four major gatherings. 10 of the candidates went to Coe College in Cedar Rapids last Friday to discuss LGBTQ issues. Then it was on to Des Moines on Saturday for two events, the Iowa People's Presidential Forum and the Polk County Democratic Steak Fry. That one drew 17 presidential candidates and 12,000 other attendees. And yesterday, the Des Moines Register and the Des Moines Public Schools co-hosted a forum on education. And while all this was going on, Iowa Democrats found out they will be able to petition the state party to host satellite caucuses next February at such places as nursing homes, work sites, even overseas. This after the Democratic National Committee's Rules and Bylaws Committee approved the use of satellite caucus sites on Friday. Now for the weather. Rain kept popping up all over the state last week, resulting in the breach of a flood barrier in western Iowa. The Missouri River flooded in Fremont, Harrison, Mills, and Pottawatomie counties. Dozens of homes were affected, and Interstate 29 was shut down by floodwaters for the third time this year. Governor Kim Reynolds issued a disaster proclamation for the counties. Also last week, hundreds of students and activists from around central Iowa rallied on Friday, demanding action on climate change. Students in 150 countries around the world joined the effort to send a message to world leaders to act more aggressively. And last week, word that a second ethanol plant had shut down in Iowa in the wake of action by the Trump administration to give 85 refineries the okay not to blend 4 billion gallons of renewable fuel into the nation's fuel supply. Those waivers have killed the demand for more than 1 billion bushels of corn used to make ethanol and wiped out demand for 825 million bushels of soybeans that go into biodiesel. That's been a significant economic hit for Iowa, which leads the nation in renewable fuel production. Governor Kim Reynolds, along with Senators Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, met with the president at the White House to talk about all this. Meanwhile, the state of California officially banned any taxpayer-funded travel to Iowa because of Iowa's new law that restricts health care for transgender Iowans who seek transition-related care. The travel ban goes into effect on October 4th. California has a law that prohibits taxpayer-funded travel to any state that limits gender protections. Iowa becomes the 11th state subject to California's travel ban. On the education beat, there were troubling reports last week about alleged incidents involving the University of Iowa band, which came to Ames for the Hawkeyes game against Iowa State. First, the athletic directors for both schools investigated the alleged incidents, then issued press releases asking fans to act better. Then came word that Iowa students witnessed what they said began as verbal assaults and racial slurs and turned into one student being forcefully groped and another suffering broken ribs. And the students who allegedly witnessed this said both Iowa State and the University of Iowa are covering up the incident. There was also word last week that enrollment is down at all three of Iowa's public universities this fall. The University of Iowa is down about 500 students from last fall. The University of Northern Iowa dropped by 715 students, and Iowa State University is down 1,600 students. Those who should be in the know about these things attribute the losses to an increasing competitive landscape, changing demographics, and fewer international students. And speaking of Iowa State University, athletic director Jamie Pollard made news last week when he announced plans for a new entertainment complex that could be built on the 41-acre parking lot between Jack Trice Stadium and the Hilton Coliseum. Consultants will start work on a $300,000 feasibility study for the project. Pollard said he envisions a possible hotel and convention center, along with restaurants and other entertainment options, such as an ice skating rink and maybe a new practice center for the university's wrestling and volleyball teams. He said it's way too early to predict how much all of this might cost. And last week, a report that all new school buses bought by school districts in the state will be required to include lap and shoulder seat belts. The new rule does not require school districts to retrofit buses in their current fleet to include seat belts. School buses cost between $90,000 and $100,000, and buses with seat belts cost about $8,000 more than those without. Meanwhile, in Des Moines last week, ambitious plans were unveiled that could transform an industrial area south of the East Village into a mixed-use district with thousands of residential units, retail shops, offices, and parks. The so-called Market District could include 3,400 apartments and townhomes and 345,000 square feet of commercial space that could generate more than $100 million in property tax revenue. The plan for the area comes from the Des Moines Urban Design Review Board. And there was even more on the possible development front in Des Moines, this one involving construction of a $60 million soccer stadium near downtown. Seems that Des Moines is being considered for a possible USL Championship soccer club, but only if a stadium is built. A site has been pinpointed near Southwest 14th Street and MLK Parkway. The USL Championship League is one step below Major League Soccer. In Dallas County, the Planning and Zoning Commission issued a conditional use permit last week for a gravel pit and concrete plant along the Raccoon River near Boonville. Residents in the area said it would destroy the rural tranquility near their homes. On the legal front last week, word that the Chief Justice of the Iowa Supreme Court had recused himself from hearing a lawsuit over changes to the state's process of selecting Supreme Court justices. Democratic lawmakers are challenging the changes in court. Chief Justice Mark Cady said he had done nothing to warrant recusal, but agreed to voluntarily step aside from the case. Also last week, word that the state Supreme Court had suspended the license of a Linn County lawyer. That lawyer, Curtis Denbest, was alleged to have mishandled client fees at the firm where he was employed. The state Supreme Court suspended his license indefinitely. Polk County supervisors made news last week when they rescinded new benefits for county department heads that they had approved without discussion last fall. At the same time last week, the supervisors voted to give the department heads a bump in their pay ranges. In Warren County, supervisors made it official. Voters will get to decide November 5th whether to grant an additional $3.5 million to build a new courthouse and law enforcement center. That additional money would bring the total cost of the project to $34 million. 60% of those voting would have to say yes for it to pass. Speaking of courthouses, two men were identified as suspects last week in connection with break-ins at two county courthouses. Polk County and Dallas County officials identified the men as 43-year-old Gary DiMercurio of Seattle and 29-year-old Justin Wynn of Naples, Florida. What makes this story even stranger is that Iowa judicial branch officials said the men had been hired to attempt unauthorized access to court records to check for potential security problems. But the officials said the men were not hired to force their way into the courthouses. The men are listed in a contract between the security firm and Iowa's judicial branch as penetration testers. Late last week, it was announced that Iowa's Senate Government Oversight Committee planned to investigate the two recent courthouse break-ins. Stay tuned. Also last week, animal advocates said that proposed changes to Iowa rules governing how dogs, cats, and other pets are treated in kennels, shelters, and stores should improve the care that animals get in the state. Those proposed changes would give pets, primarily cats and dogs, more room and bigger cages, and prohibit leaving animals in sweltering hot rooms without water for hours at a time. And there was word that the Iowa 4-H Foundation planned to sell the Cloverwoods Camp and Retreat Center near Madrid. That camp is on 1,000 acres off the Des Moines River, and it features five villages that can house up to 300 people. There's a climbing tower, a zip line, a swimming pool, 20 miles of trails, a pond, and more. The reason for the sale? Declining attendance. Now for an update on those popular blackout Iowa license plates. They sold out fast in Story and Polk counties, but new shipments have arrived. Enough said. In the world of college football this past Saturday, Iowa State University easily defeated Louisiana Monroe University 72-20 at Jack Trice Stadium. The University of Northern Iowa defeated Idaho State 13-6. And the University of Iowa did not have a game on Saturday. And there's one more story I just have to tell you about. It's about the Altoona man who was in the audience a week ago when ESPN's Game Day pregame football show aired live from Jack Trice Stadium. Seems that 24-year-old Carson King had held up a sign that appeared on the air, a sign asking for money so he could buy beer. He said he was just hoping to get a few bucks to buy a pack of his favorite brand. Turns out he raised a lot more than a few bucks. By some accounts, as of this past weekend, counting matching donations from the beer company and from another company, nearly $1 million had been raised. Carson King said he would donate it to the Children's Hospital in Iowa City. And the beer company said it would supply King with his favorite beer for 1 year, and that the cans he will receive will have his name and face on them, along with the phrase, Iowa Legend. Now, that is a great story. The best, as a matter of fact. And that is your summary of the week's news from all around the state, Gale. I'm Dennis Hart, and I'll be right back here on Wednesday, hosting Local Talk with Ursula Rudenberg, and our guests will include Michael Crum, the editor of the Ames Tribune. Hope you can join us.
Thanks to Dennis Hart for that news update. And the music we heard was Chan Chan by the Buena Vista Social Club. And that music sets the tone for our next segment, because in the studio with us now is Lucia Suarez, who is an associate professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Iowa State, and also director of the U.S. Latino-Latina Studies Program there. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for welcoming me.
You're relatively new to ISU, so let's start by having you tell us a bit about yourself.
So, as you said, my name is Lucia Suarez, and that tells you already that I have a Latin American name. I am from the Northeast. My parents are Cuban, and I was born in Spain. I was born in transit. They fled their exiles from Cuba, and I was born in Spain, raised in the Northeast, mostly West New York, New Jersey, and New York City itself. I have been profoundly affected by their displacement. And so as a graduate student, as a college student, and as a graduate student, I found myself thinking about what does it mean to be bicultural, biliterate. And so that's my work. I've done work on thinking about terms of identity, terms of how we become who we are. And I work on memoirs, which is what I've brought to Iowa State. And I work on the issues of social mobility, race, and ethnicity.
And you came to ISU talking about mobility, with the goal of further developing the Latino-Latina Studies program. What has that work entailed of trying to really fortify that program?
So I was actually thrilled to be offered the job to resuscitate the Latino-Latina Studies program here at ISU. It's exactly the kind of work that I was ready to be doing at this point in my life and career. It entails lots of connecting, lots of talking to people, lots of meeting people, lots of figuring out what's going on in Iowa, what's going on in our communities, who are our students. Who are our faculty members? What is our faculty doing across the board? It's been a lot of fun because I've gotten to meet people who work in Sioux City. I've gotten to work with Outreach and Extension. We have a large and growing community of Latino students on campus, which kind of responds to the land-grant mission that ISU has. You know, who are our communities? How do we educate all of our communities, and how do we include them? And that said, it's not only about Latino students. We have an amazing number of students from everywhere else who are involved with the program. It's about knowledge building. It's about community work. It's about learning and teaching. So what has it entailed? It's entailed a lot of good work connecting people, and that's what the 25-year anniversary symposium is all about.
So let's get to that. That's one of the big things you've been organizing probably for the last few years,
exactly.
I imagine. So it's called the U.S. Latino-Latina Studies 25-Year Anniversary Symposiums. Did I get that right?
You got it perfectly. Thank you.
Okay, so when and what? And tell us about it.
So the anniversary is going to have three parts. So
the program is 25 years old, and that's
the celebration.
The program
is 25 years old, and it's a celebration. It's celebrating that it's been around for so long. A lot of programs of this kind have not been around that long in this country. Some of them have, so I'm not saying that it's the oldest or the only, but it's significant that it's been around for 25 years. It shows that ISU as an academic unit or as an academic institution has vision in terms of how do we include our population. So that's really pretty wonderful. So there are three parts. Part number one is what is this Saturday, September 28, starting at 8 a.m., we have a symposium lined up with an entire day of panels, meals, music, and conversation. So the part of what I've been doing is gathering, right? So the theme of the symposium is commitment, connection, inclusion. So it's our commitment to learning, to sharing, to knowledge, our connection amongst all of our different constituencies, our communities, our children, our grandparents, our churches, our classes, our different departments across the campus. And inclusion is really the intention is that we feel included, all of us, and that we imagine larger connections, commitment to community. Mm-hmm. So at the risk of being redundant, it's about commitment to knowledge and connections to each other.
And what is the schedule for today? Give us a little
more
information.
It's a jam-packed schedule, and I'll give you just a couple of highlights. So it will be introduced by the Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences, Dean Beata Schmidtman. We'll have introductions by our core faculty, Dr. Megan Myers and Dr. Brian Beamkin. They'll be talking about their work. They'll be talking about how they're connected to Latino studies and our students and our other faculty. Two of the highlights in the morning are that we'll be having student testimonials. So we have students from all over campus that are part of Latino studies, and they'll be talking about why it's meaningful to them, how they fit in, and how it shapes their careers, the way that they see themselves in the world. Another part that we're going to have is USLS leadership, faculty-student collaborations, shaping engaged citizens. So we have someone from STEM speaking with her students. We have we're featuring a special course taught by Dr. Megan Myers, Iowa Culture and Community, Iowa and Midwest Latinos, and her students will be speaking. We have an internship class. Every summer, we have internships out in Des Moines, and we have internships in Sioux City. So those will be featured. So we have students who did internships in at the Iowa State Human Rights Center, and we have students who have done a special Rising Stars pilot program, which has been started in the last year with outreach and extension. We also have a new class in the Spanish department called Spanish for Heritage Speakers. That's many children grow up in Spanish-speaking households, mm-hmm. but don't learn Spanish, right? And so we
right,
have...
They didn't study it further.
They didn't study it. They didn't read it. They didn't write it often. That's the case. Yeah. And so there's a special class
Wonderful.
For kids who speak. You know, they dream in Spanish. But, you know, sitting down to write in Spanish, just mm-hmm. like sitting down to write in English, it's a task. It's a journey of learning. So we have this new class that we'll be featuring about that, and it's super exciting. We have a special guest speaker coming from California. His name is William Nericio, and he is doing our keynote speech. He's speaking at 1 o'clock, and I'm inviting everyone, if they can't come to anything else, to join us for lunch. We're having lunch. We're featuring Latin American foods at 12 noon at the Memorial Union, mm-hmm. and then we have a keynote speaker. I'm actually inviting everyone to spend the entire day and hang out with us, because they're all highlights in their own way. He, however, is speaking specifically to the issue of stereotypes and stereotyping. And his talk goes side by side with the new exhibit at the Multicultural Center, also at the Memorial Union. So he'll be speaking about stereotypes. He has written a book about stereotypes. He has a traveling exhibit about stereotypes. And it's a fascinating way of thinking differently about how negative images can be re-seen and actually repurposed to think about the dynamic ways in which inclusion works. We also have in the afternoon, we have a special panel of Latinos in the sciences. There are Latinos, Latinas, Latinx people everywhere. We're part of a large community. The community is part of us. And we'll be featuring the biology program, the Department of Chemistry, and the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. We will have two more panels before we have a tapas celebration. So let me talk about the other two panels. We have a panel called Latinx and Latinx Allied Voices across the ISU campus. And we're featuring our faculty. We're featuring our faculty in the School of Ed, in the College of Engineering. We're featuring our faculty in the College of Business and the College of Design. Just to say that we have faculty all over campus doing amazing work that includes Latino, Latina topics. And so they'll be speaking. And also we have faculty that are Latino and Latina. Mm-hmm. So we're just getting a little bit of everything. Finally, our last panel is a special panel also of speakers that have been brought in from the Midwest to Iowa State, especially for the program. We will have a panel called Latinx Programming in the Midwest. And that's a discussion of program histories in the region with directors and founders of programs from the Midwest. So we're featuring someone from the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. That's Dr. Larry LaFontaine Stokes, Dr. Bill Johnson Gonzalez from DePaul University in Chicago, Dr. Sylvia Martinez from Indiana University, and Dr. Daryl Wanser Serrano from University of Iowa. So despite the fact that our teams play against each other, our departments, yeah, everybody's invited, and our departments work with each other, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of like pretty cool. We have another panel that's called Inclusion and the Future of Latino Studies at Iowa State University. And we're featuring Dr. Rita Mukherjee from Women and Gender Studies, Dr. Sebastian Brown from American Indian Studies, and Diana Sloan. She's the Program Director for Hispanic and Latino Affairs. I mean, I'm just tickled, thrilled, excited about all of the people that will be there. We've got 70 presenters and volunteers. So we have student volunteers, we have presenters, and hopefully we have space for up to 300 people. So we're hoping to see our community, our campus, all here.
And everyone is invited to attend.
It is free
open to
the public, absolutely.
And how can people register? Because you want them to register in advance, correct?
We need registrations because we need the headcount for safety and security, of course. You know, we can't have more than 300. So they should go online to language.iastate.edu/USLS25/.
Okay. We will put that link with this show when we post it on the KHOI website. So when people are listening and they just missed that, just later today, go to the KHOI website and that link will be there.
That sounds fabulous. And I think I didn't mention that we'll be featuring tapas and entertainment. So we have a mariachi band from our students. We have música andina, that's Andean music, also played, performed by our students, and a playlist also put together by our students. We have very gifted students.
And this is taking place during Latino Heritage Month, which is a national event occurring from September 15th to October 15th. And there are some other things going on at ISU. Maybe you can give us a bit of that information.
There are a lot of things going on at ISU, and I would recommend that people get online and see what's going on. As part of the USLS 25, U.S. Latino Studies Program 25-year anniversary. We are also working together with Parks Library. And so we have a documentary film festival that's running from September 19 to October 10. It's every Thursday at 6 p.m. in Library 198. We are showing four really interesting films. Thursday, September 19 passed, so sorry, but we've got three more. Thursday, September 26, Stolen Education, and we'll have a Q&A with Dr. Brian Beenkin. Then Thursday, October 3, Voices from Mariel, and we'll have a Q&A with me, Dr. Lucia Suarez. And Thursday, October 10, The Last Colony, a meditation on Puerto Rico's political status. And that will have a Q&A with Dr. Jose Rosa. So that's one event. And then the other event is the six-week Multicultural Center art exhibit called Mextasy that goes hand-in-hand with our keynote speaker.
And that's up ongoing. So people can go see that anytime in the Memorial Union.
Throughout October. So
yes.
September, October. Okay. And, you know, it's a beautiful space. I was just there. The exhibit is really gorgeous. It's provocative, and it's also entertaining. So I welcome faculty to bring their students, their classes there. And actually I was thinking it would be great for middle school and high school. So I've got to send them little flyers and remind them this is going on. And because it's so dynamic and colorful and provocative, I think it's just a perfect space for thinking about issues of identity, racism, sexism, stereotyping, labels. It's a good kind of place to safely talk about hard issues. It's really, I'm inviting everybody to come join us.
Why do you think the Latino-Latina Studies program is particularly important to ISU and even to the wider community?
It's important on many, many levels. I think number one is the number of students of Latin American background who are Latino, Latina in the United States also has grown exponentially. Statistics show that the largest number of students going to colleges across the country are Latino, Latinx. So that's number one. It's a growing demographic that's important, that's incredibly valuable. The schools, say, for example, for the School of Ed, it's important because a lot of our teachers go out and work in communities that have Latino, Latinx students. Issues of diversity that are learned through Latino, Latina studies are issues that can be applied to other populations also. So it's not just Latinos and Latinas. I mean, in fact, Latinos and Latinas have all kinds of backgrounds because of the nature of colonialism. You know, you can be an Afro-Latino. You can be a blonde, blue-eyed Latino. You can be Chinese Latino, right? So that when you think of what that umbrella term means, it's huge. And then so when you think of that kind of programming, it's a programming to help us think beyond little boxes mm-hmm. and tight labels, but really to think broadly about intersecting communities, blurred and messy identities, think about our individual and special stories, think about geography. So Latino-Latina studies is, got, you know, it's this kind of very specific almost title. But in fact, it's about diversity. It's about inclusion. It's about equity. It's about community and communicating. It's about knowledge, knowledge production. It's about actually not labeling people as one thing and thinking something static when it's completely not that at all. Mm-hmm. So I think it's an incredibly important program because it connects with so many other programs and disciplines and ways of being and thinking. And to think that broadly is incredibly useful if we're thinking in terms of social justice mm-hmm. and peace.
Yeah. Well, I think you've intrigued people and piqued people's interest and given them a little taste of what they can expect if they're able to come to the symposium. And so we encourage people to do that. Again, it's this Saturday, starting at 8 in the morning until
9 p.m.
All right. So going right into the evening. But people can come for all or part of it.
They can welcome at any time. They can come and see one panel, then go over to the exhibit uh-huh. and then come back, come and have some lunch.
Okay.
The key is
register. And we'll put that link up so people can do that. Thank you so much for coming in to tell us about it and to tell us about the U.S. Latino-Latina Studies program at ISU.
And Gail, thank you for having me and welcoming the program online. Thank
yeah,
you.
More people can know about it, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
That was Vivir Mi Vida by Mark Anthony, and hopefully getting you in the mood for the Latino-Latina Studies Anniversary Symposium, which is coming up on Saturday. And before Dr. Suarez left, she mentioned that the Center for Excellence in Arts and Humanity provided a grant for the program, the symposium that's coming up, and that numerous other departments and programs across campus gave financial support to this symposium. So get there. It sounds fascinating. This past week, University Athletic Director Jamie Pollard announced a plan for development of the area around Jack Trice Stadium and Hilton Coliseum, turning it into a multi-use entertainment district. The information that was made available suggests that the development might include restaurants, shops, etc., and might include new parking areas on the east side of University Avenue. And in fact, many people voice concerns about the loss of parking and tailgating spots around Hilton. In the announcement, the emphasis was on the athletic department, and there seemed to be less mention of the Iowa State Center, which is also located in that area. However, the announcement did say that the Iowa State Center would now be managed by the athletics department. So we wanted to find out more about how these plans would impact the Iowa State Center and their programs. So I spoke with Tammy Kuhlbeck, who is the executive director of the Iowa State Center. The quote in the newspaper was that this will be transformational. So we wanted to hear from your perspective of the director of the Iowa State Center, what you thought the impact might be for the center. But before we get to that, remind our listeners, when we say Iowa State Center, what are we talking about?
Sure. Historically, the Iowa State Center has been the four buildings that set to the north of Jack Trice. So it's Hilton, Scheman, Fisher, and Stevens. And then about 10 years ago, there was a reorganization. Athletics took back Hilton. So for the last 10 years or so, the three buildings, which is Stevens, Fisher, and Scheman, have been managed by our staff. In August of 2015, VenueWorks, the company I work for, won an RFP that the university put out, and we have been managing those three buildings.
And most people know those three buildings because of the cultural and artistic events and programs that many of us have attended there. And remind us what kinds of things those buildings do provide the community.
I'm happy to do that. I'm always excited to talk about what we're doing there. So Stevens is a 2,600-seat performing arts. We just celebrated our 50th anniversary on September 9th. And it is really a jewel of a performing arts center. And so we do anywhere between 175 to 200 events a year. And we do a multitude, just really a lot of different things. We do concerts. We just had the Head and the Heart last Thursday. We just announced Bob Dylan, and he'll be here on October 23rd. Our season starts. We have a performing arts series that we program in that building. We start on that on October 2nd with Cirque May. And our first Broadway show of this year is Beautiful on October 17th. And then we do 4-H and FFA. We have a Goldfinch room that we've made into a listening room in the Celebrity Cafe area to add additional programming. We do a number of university music events. And so that's all at Stevens. So we're very busy. The fashion show is there, the Nutcracker. And then at Fisher, we're home to the Iowa State University's theater department. And they really kind of own that building between August and May for their performances. So that building is very busy as well. And that do 112 performances, but we probably have another, I guess close to 100 rehearsal days in that. And then Scheman. The Scheman building was the last of the buildings constructed, I believe, and opened in 75. Brunier Museum sits on our second floor there. Right. They just had their grand reopening. It's a beautiful space. Everybody should come see that. And we do, we have the career fairs going on right now, and we do a number of events. We have probably, I think that number is maybe 400 events a year. We run food and beverage for all three of those facilities. So, yeah, we're pretty hopping.
So, in the recent announcement, it seemed like there was quite a focus on athletics and the involvement of the research park. It said that the management of Iowa State Center, the three buildings, the three venues that you just mentioned, would be handed over to athletics. So, I think there's some concern within the community of what that means for the kinds of things that you were just talking about. So what's your sense of that now?
Well, oversight of the three buildings was moved over to athletics. So
just recently.
That, right. Yeah. That occurred on August 1st. So prior to being handed over to athletics, we answered up through the interim senior vice president of finance and business services. So now we're answering up through athletics. So the VenueWorks contract runs until June of 2020. So for us, it's business as usual right now. We're not sure what the future's going to look like because we're working with athletics, and athletics is, you know, kind of making those decisions on what the future is going to look like. You know, they talk about the transformational piece, and they've certainly, I think if you go to their website, they've got some drawings and a flyover that they put out in their press
release.
Right. Decisions about that new arrangement with what it might look like for VenueWorks will be discussed over the next several months. And athletics department personnel is starting to meet with our staff and just kind of looking to see what we do and how we do it and our processes. But right now it's business as usual. As I said earlier, we have Bob Dylan coming up. We just announced that last week. We announced three new shows this week. We're already booked our first shows for 2021 season. So we've been told to continue booking Stevens as we do it now.
And there's a feasibility study that's going to be conducted. They hired a company to do that. And the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau is involved in that. Is your organization involved in that?
We are not. I mean, beyond providing them the information that they need when they ask for it.
It seemed like there was a lot of attention to the fact that there were some shortcomings in the current buildings. And in fact, the article in the Trib did mention, it had a quote from ISU Athletic Director Jamie Pollard that said, "For the last 50 years, Iowa State University hasn't reinvested in the Iowa State Center. And as a result, those facilities have dire deferred maintenance needs." So what would you say about that? And do you think that this maybe then is a positive thing that might bring more recognition of the needs of those venues?
Sure. I mean, we do have lots of we do have several items of deferred maintenance that we've been kind of ticking off over the years. Probably our biggest need at Stevens is so we can make it more inclusive. We need more restrooms. We need restrooms on the main floor, and we need handrails really on the main floor. And certainly athletics has a lot more resources than we do, so we're hopeful that some of those would push forward. Sheman has a lot of needs too. We've been looking to replace carpet and do some of those things. And certainly with Brunier opening up, you know, there's an investment in that building now, too. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's probably some resources that athletics has that the university might not have been able to fund on a deferred maintenance program. So, yeah, we're very hopeful that we'll be able to get some of those projects done that we've had on our list for a number of years.
So it sounds like right now you're going, as you said, you're going ahead. This year is events occurring. You're planning for the next couple of years already.
Mm-hmm.
So people should feel good about that.
Yes.
And are you concerned, or should people be concerned? Because I've heard it expressed that people had some concerns that athletics was taking over and that they may have a different perspective on what's important to the community than people who have been involved in promoting the arts here in Ames or taking advantage of what's offered in the Iowa State Center.
Well, I think that certainly their perspective is based on athletics because that's what they do every day. And I think it's probably our job and my job specifically as the director of those buildings to make sure they understand what we do and why it's important. And I think it's important that the community also, you know, make themselves be heard as well if they have any concerns. But, you know, we're going with the attitude that we're doing what's best for Iowa State University and for the Ames community, and there should be and will be a place for the arts.
And so that would be kind of your hope for the best case scenario. What will come out of this?
Absolutely, that we have the opportunity to fix some of those deferred maintenance items that have been on the list for a while and continue to offer the breadth of programming that we do for the community.
And if people are concerned or want to express their desires to have those venues supported and continue offering what they've been offering and even offer more, any suggestions on how people can express that?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think they could always reach out to me at the Iowa State Center. You know, they could make their I don't want everyone flooding athletics email boxes, you know, or the universities. But, you know, I just think talking to the people that they know so they can express that it's important. I'm sure that President Winterstein would be interested in hearing if there are any, you know, concerns. And even Jamie Pollard would be interested in hearing more. I mean, I think that they're open to, I mean, I think they have, I think there's a vision there, but I don't think that that vision is so set in stone that it can't be molded to make sure that there's a place for the arts. And there's not ever been any discussion about, you know, Stevens going away or Fisher going away by any means. And so I think that what we just, for the arts community, we just need to make sure that we can continue growing the program like we've been growing it over the past few years, and that this partnership, because of all that athletics can bring to the table, I mean, it's a great department, and you know they do their jobs well, and so we want to just make sure that we're doing everything we can to help make this transition successful. But people should absolutely feel free to voice ideas along with concerns, and just let us know.
That was Tammy Kuhlbeck, the executive director of the Iowa State Center. And we've been joined in the studio now by Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This is your time, so we know you always have a lot to share with us, so let's get right into it.
I'm so excited. So it's fall, even though it seems like it's been very humid, it's still very summer-like, but fall is here. And so we've got a lot of great events happening, and so we're going to talk about October. And so right away in October, on October 1st, that's a Tuesday, you could take your lunch break with University Museums, and they have what they call It Starts With Us Gallery Chat. And it goes from 12 to 12:30 p.m. in the Ryman Gallery in Morrill Hall on campus. And on Tuesday, October 1st, they'll have Dr. Jonathan Sturm, who is the professor of music. And these are informal gallery-led discussions about various themes and works of art in their current exhibit called It Starts With Us, Civility and the 21st Land Grant Mission. So what a great way to have a little lunch break, learn a little bit about their
nice
exhibit,
hear
from a great professor, a little take on music and how it fits into this exhibit. And that's October 1st. Then on Wednesday, let's get healthy. October, it's the Healthiest State Month. And so we'll be celebrating with the Mayor's Downtown Healthiest State Walk. So that's Wednesday, October 2nd. It goes from starts at 12 o'clock at City Hall. And everyone's invited to join the mayor and members of the City Council as they walk. They'll start in front of City Hall and walk around downtown. And just a fun way to get kick off your month and think about walking healthy and maybe eating healthy. And of course, our award-winning Ames Water will be available to help refresh you after your walk. So something fun to start your week.
And then another fun thing to do during your lunch break.
Absolutely. And so also there are some great shows that happen at Stevens Auditorium this month. And as always, check out Stevens Auditorium, Season at Stevens, their performing arts series. But they've got an event called Cirque May. I think I'm saying that correctly. But it's from the People's Republic of China, and they'll have a great show that has hoops diving, lion dance, collective bicycle skills, foot juggling, and what a great opportunity to see this traveling show that will entertain all ages. And that's at 7 o'clock on Wednesday, October 2nd. And I saw a similar show while in China myself, and so it is well worth it to come check this out. You'll be amazed at what they have to offer. If you'd like to test your trivia, there's trivia at Alluvial Brewing on October 2nd, starts at 7 p.m., free admission. So just join, have fun, and up there in North Ames as well, and test your skills with that. Also, another thing that can with art, Human Sciences Art Walk, they're going to talk about their ever-growing collection. So this is Thursday, October 3rd, another way to spend your great lunch break, you know, lunch break on campus.
Yeah,
and
that
outside.
Seems to be the fall theme.
Yeah, I know. Get outside. So this is in partnership with the University Museums and the College of Human Sciences, and they're going to go through. They have over 2,000 works of public art, and so they're going to kind of walk you through just a small portion of that and show you all the great pieces they have on campus that are focused in the human sciences buildings.
So, wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That's impressive.
We are so lucky to have that great public art collection there on campus. So, speaking of which, Bernier Art Museum just reopened so last week on Thursday. So be sure to go check out their brand new exhibit in the Shima Building.
And their new space.
Oh my gosh, it's lovely, lovely. So be sure to check that out. Also, as we continue on into October, there's a seed harvest that you can join on Thursday, October 3rd. This is out at Doolittle Prairie from our friends at Story County Conservation. So it starts at 4:30 p.m. And it's a family-friendly event where you gather seeds and you can kind of learn about the prairie and help them as well. So that starts at 4:30 p.m. at Doolittle Prairie.
And what date was that again?
October 3rd.
October 3rd. Mm-hmm. Okay. That sounds cool.
Very good. Then if you're into making more arts, we're full of arts this month, it's called Maker Night Stamped Copper Charms. And this is on October 3rd, that's a Thursday, at the Octagon Center for Arts downtown Ames.
Right across from KHOI.
Absolutely, yeah. So this is like bring your friends and some snacks to enjoy, and they're going to walk you through how to use copper and make charms and dangles and other fun adornments. So that starts at 6 p.m. on October 3rd.
And is that for all ages? Or?
That is a 21 and older event.
Okay, so more of an adult.
So that is for the adults. But if you're interested in learning how to make that craft, I'd join that as well. If you like comedy, you can come back to Stevens Auditorium on the 3rd. At 7:30 p.m., the comedian Dane Cook will be in town for his very popular comedy tour and show. So be sure to check that out as well. And then as we keep going, there is something called the Climate Change Theater Action, Lighting the Way. And this is part of the ISU Theater's series Heroic, a season of plays and musicals written by women in celebration of the women's suffrage centennial and their commitments to the 50-50 by 2020 initiative. And so on October 4th and 5th, at 7:30 p.m. At ISU Parks Library and the Ames Public Library, they will be having some celebrations and some presentations on Lighting the Way. It's a series of short plays that address climate change issues. And so we invite you to come check that out. And then on the 4th as well, from 10 to 12 at Fisher Theater, they also have a presentation there as well. So it's just some great things happening with ISU Theater.
Yeah, that heroic series sounds interesting. Dramatic productions all with that theme and involving women.
It should be good, so be sure to check that out. First Friday Wine and Cheese Tastings happening on Friday, October 4th. That'll be at the Wheatsfield Cooperative on the west end of Main Street. And that starts at 5 o'clock, and they have great folks there who do local sourcing of their wine and beer and their cheese. So very tasty and delicious, and they are the experts, so you'll learn some as well. If you're into our farmers market, I do want to mention that our Ames Main Street Farmers Market is still open in October, but they change their time a little bit. So they open at 9 a.m. during the month of October. It gets a little chillier in the morning.
Okay, yeah. So they are opening a little later.
A little later. So still lots of good product and things.
Great fall vegetables.
My gosh. Ooh, it's always a good time.
Still getting tomatoes and things like that, but now lots of the winter squash.
Absolutely. So you can sleep in just a little bit before you come downtown on Saturdays in October. For those of you who like trains and pumpkins, the Pumpkin Express, our friends at Boone and Scenic Valley Railroad over in Boone will be having the Pumpkin Express start that is in October. And so Saturday, October 5th, you can get into your Halloween costume, take the family on a train ride, and you stop and get to pick a pumpkin and bring it back with you. So always a good time with that. Our friends at Central Iowa Symphony will be hosting a concert on Saturday, October 5th. So this will be at Ames City Auditorium. They've got music from Duke Ellington's Suite, The River, and they're opening their 2019-2020 season in a grand style. So we invite you to come down to hear their concert on October 5th. As always, football season is raring to go and has been going. If you're interested in maybe some fun, at family fun at the ISU Alumni Center, they have their Cyclone Central tailgate where they have the band that comes and the cheer squad. And so it's a fun way to kind of kick off and be part of the festivities, even if you don't have a ticket to the game. So always a good time there. For the kids, they have Wild Tots. This is kind of ongoing through October, and this is put on by Story County Conservation, but it is at McFarland Park, and so they have various days on Sundays and Mondays, and we just invite you to check out their website, and it's an outdoor classroom for growing and developing toddlers in preschools. And so they're going to help you learn about nature, like digging in the mud, searching for nature treasures and books and songs and a lot of nature-inspired play. So that's all through the month of October with Story County Conservation at McFarland Park called Wild Tots.
So look at their website.
Look at their website for various dates and times. Yeah.
We probably have time for one more thing.
One more thing. Oh, I don't want to forget this. So let's talk about the Ames Artist Studio Tour. So that's October 12th and the 13th. That is all throughout Ames, and it does not have a single location. So you get to, there are participating studios throughout the Ames area. You provide your own transportation. They have a map, or you stop at one of the studio locations. They'll get you directions, and you get to take a peek into the life of an artist. So we invite you to check that out and go to their website at amesart.org, and then they can walk you through where you should go.
I remember that from previous years. It's very cool, and it's different every year. So
Absolutely.
If you went one year, you may go back and see different artists this year. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you so much, Crystal. We've been speaking with Crystal Davis from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau, and we know that you only got through part of your list of happenings, so we'll let people know that they can hear you giving part two of what's happening later in October over the next week on Local Talk.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday and Wednesday, and 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. on Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Chan Chan by Buena Vista Social Club and a song by Mark Anthony. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, so you can be part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you would like to join us, contact us at 515-292-2878. If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting The Kingdom Choir, Monday, October 7th at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.